This podcast is part of the Podcast Arcade Network.
Hello, I am Randy Andrews, and today I'm live at O Comic Con with Billy Peck, and we're going to talk about the classic 1968 Planet of the Apes. This is in line with the release of War of the Planet of the Apes that comes out in theaters this next Friday. We will talk the background, the cast, the effects, the info on Jerry Goldsmith and his contribution, as well as a neat little preview of War of the Planet of the Apes, all today on Soundtrack Alley. Hey, Billy.
Hello, how's it going, Randy?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Enjoying being here at O Comic Con.
It's been a blast. I've had a great time. And we've been trying to schedule this off and on throughout the whole weekend. It's been busy, it's been fun, but I'm glad to finally sit down and be able to talk about one of my favorite franchises of all time.
So one of the things I really found interesting about the background on Planet of the Apes is when they were doing the production side of things and they would sit around with the various people between scenes, They would sit with their individual crews, like the gorillas with gorillas,
yep.
The orangutans with the orangutans.
Yeah, it's interesting, like, it keeps it still that very secluded, very segregated.
Segregated, yeah.
You know, which really touches on the themes of the movie and the structure of kind of life at that time.
Yeah.
And, to know that that's kind of what happened, like, I don't know if it was meant to be that way, if it just kind of naturally happened or what, but
yeah.
That's interesting thing that they did.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I found it really funny in a way. And one of the things I found was that Ingrid Bergman was originally set to play as like Zira, the female ape. She turned it down.
Right.
And she said that it was one of her greatest regrets.
Yeah.
Because it would have actually boosted her star power.
Yeah.
I mean, she also regretted missing working with Charlton Heston.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, at that time, like, I suppose there probably wasn't a ton of, like, mainstream, you know, like, the movies, you know, starred by a bunch of apes.
Yeah.
You know, and I just don't know that there was a whole lot of, like, starring type of roles where someone was in a prosthetic the whole time. You know, unlike something like Frankenstein, you know, years beforehand, or Wolfman, but, like, it's one person. Now you have a whole movie of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I bet it was just like, well, you're not even going to see my face. Why would I be in a, you know, ape costume with all these other apes? Like, who's going to watch that?
Yeah. And then, like, Roddy McDowall, He was in it.
Yep.
And he recommended to his companions that they should add ticks and blinks.
Yeah.
Facial gestures to add, like, a sense of realism to the
him
film.
And, him and Zira, I forget the actress that actually played
Yeah, I can't remember. It's Isabella. No, that's not it.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I don't think it's in my notes.
Not a huge...
Oh, no, it's Kim Hunter.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. she took Valium every morning.
But, yeah, like, those two really you know, accentuated those facial tics and yeah. whatnot, and really built character. Just, you know, even without, you know, speaking, like, you could tell the difference of, you know, one ape to another just by their
yeah.
facial expressions and
yeah, or was, their movements.
Yes, yes.
Like, you could tell by their son
mm-hmm.
That he had his specific way of moving, and
yeah.
you could tell
yep.
he was younger, and
very much so.
It was just unique.
I mean, and most of them did a great job, but just something about, you know, Zira and Cornelius, they just, wow.
Yeah, yeah. And I really liked it that it said in my notes, allegedly, Jerry Goldsmith wore a gorilla mask
yep.
as he conducted.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure he probably did.
And I think that's really cool. Like, you know, I play in a band, and there's, you know, certain shows where, like, I mean, I try to bring a theatrical presence to it, and there's times where, like, I might wear makeup and whatnot, and it does put you in a different mindset. You know, it kind of gives you the freedom to express a character almost
mm-hmm.
that you may not do in your own skin.
Yeah.
So him creating this very unique music, which at times, like, I don't even know if I could call it, like, music.
It was more sounds.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He used, like, common, like, steel bowls
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
pans and tools. And
like, I can totally...
It was effective.
Yeah. I can totally picture him, like, getting into ape mode with some pots and pans and just smashing them on the ground in some sort of rhythmic pattern to...
Yeah.
And then recording it.
Yeah.
And I... You just kind of feel that in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when I was watching the audio commentary,
mm-hmm.
he was talking about that when he had recorded the audio commentary, it had been 20 years since he'd seen it.
Oh, sure.
And so it was 1988
yeah.
when he recorded the commentary. And I was like, wow. And he looks back and looks at the different areas of film, and... One thing that really impressed me about Planet of the Apes is the fact that a lot of scenes didn't have music.
Right.
They were silent.
Yep.
And it gave this realistic, more identifying feeling toward
sure.
other people to be there and to see the scene and not be distracted by music.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and... You know, I suppose to get into the music some more, one of the things that I really love about it, you know, like I said, you know, a lot of it doesn't even feel like music, per se. And, you know, I'm kind of going back to, you know, the same word, you know, as, you know, with Zira and Cornelius and, you know, the apes, you know, facial expressions. The music was... expressions in itself.
Yeah.
I was actually talking about this with someone the other day, and obviously not done as in a silly manner, but it's almost kind of like watching Tom and Jerry.
Yeah.
Where the music is expressing what their movements are, their feelings are. And I know that's kind of similar to a lot of films anyway. The music's more to invoke an emotion on the viewer, where this, like, it makes you feel like exactly what they are feeling, and it the music is doing the talking for a lot of characters that, you know, especially like the humans,
yeah,
who don't speak.
Yeah.
You know, them running or like juking, you know, like a football player would, like, you know, like you hear like those xylophone, you know, runs where it's just like, you know, they're running and, you know, it's like,
yeah.
you know, it's just...
It creates a mood.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. And it's really great how he was able to do that.
Yeah, I liked also the fact that, like, at one point, Charlton Heston saw Kim Hunter without her makeup on.
Yeah.
Without her mask on. He didn't know who she was. All right, so one thing I noticed about the film was the fact that the woman that played Nova,
mm-hmm.
Linda Harrison.
Yep.
She was actually pregnant.
Oh.
During the film.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah. She was pregnant with the producer's child.
Right. The Arthur P. Jacobs.
Richard Zanuck.
Arthur P. Jacobs. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it was starting to show at the end of the shoot, and so they had to carefully change, like, the positions of the shoot so that way you wouldn't notice that she was starting
yeah.
to show.
Yeah.
But, and then another thing that really impressed me was this is one of the first films that had a major, big-scale merchandising tie-in.
Oh,
like
yeah.
They started to have, like,
yeah.
all sorts of different toys and
Star
games
Wars kind of gets the credit for film merchandise,
yeah.
but, I mean, Apes came out, you know, almost 10 years prior.
Yeah.
Maybe not quite.
Yeah, yeah
but,
about 10 years.
Yeah, like, they had huge play sets
yeah.
and, yeah, all kinds of figures and stuff, and, yeah, yeah.
And then, just recently... In the Comics Previews magazine,
yeah.
there's a new Planet of the Apes game that takes place, and it's got like little scale models of
yeah.
like the Statue
oh, like
of Liberty and
like a tabletop game.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Oh, okay, I got gotcha.
And I guess it just came out, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
that it's still
being you know
made
that's the great thing, you know, with nerd culture nowadays, and you know, people have always wanted to own things from their favorite movies, and not everything has been made available.
Yeah.
And Apes is, you know, with these new movies that have been coming out, and they've been really coming out with some great things, whether it be books, comics, figures, games. It's nice.
Yeah, yeah, it's nice to see that because then it draws more people to look at like the originals and see exactly.
Yep.
Well, what were these movies about? Why are these new ones such a big rave?
Full disclosure, so, yeah, and this is why I think it is or can be important. You know, a lot of people, you know, get a little disgruntled nowadays because everything's a remake or
yeah.
this or that. And the new films aren't necessarily remakes, but it's dredging up something old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a new idea, whatever. You know, to some people. Growing up, when I was a kid, I had only seen, like, some episodes of the TV series.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it, you know? And I was like, well, I don't ever need to watch Planet of the Apes. And I remember being in the theater, and when Rise of Planet of the Apes came on the screen, and I didn't know what it was. I just saw, you know, the trailer. And I'm like, ooh, this looks really cool. And I'm a big, you know, my favorite animals are apes, and, you know, gorillas, orangutans, whatever. And not knowing what it was, I'm like, whoa, this looks really cool. And it says Rise of the Planet. I'm like, what? This is an apes movie? Holy crap, this looks great. Watched it, fell in love with it.
Yeah.
And then on HBO, they had like a couple weeks or a month or whatever later, they had a marathon of all of the original films. I'm like,
oh, nice.
All
That's
right. I really like this movie. I'll go check these out. And I was glued. Like, I fell in love with it. So, like, honestly, I've only been a fan of the franchise for a couple years.
Yeah.
But the original stuff is so good that, like, it knocked a lot of my favorite franchises down a couple notches because it's
yeah.
so good.
Yeah.
And then I go back and watch the TV yeah. series and really like it and the cartoon. And it's like, all right, this is awesome. So, anyway... Like you were saying, you know, it gives people a chance to maybe check out the original stuff, you know, or if you're a fan of the old stuff and going, what's all the big
yeah.
rave about this new stuff?
Yeah.
It all kind of works and helps each other out sometimes. It did me.
Yeah. And, I mean, like, I like the fact that a lot of the background stuff and, like, different set pieces,
it's amazing.
They added they added so much.
The
like,
matte paintings.
The matte paintings. Oh, the cinematography was absolutely fantastic.
Oh, yeah. It accentuates all those sets. It's amazing.
Like having them walk through that desert area. Mm-hmm. I think it was Utah or Nevada. I can't remember. But it was perfect the way they filmed it. And Jerry Goldsmith had talked about the use of that. It was called The Search.
Mm-hmm.
And they were searching for either technology or food or water.
Yeah.
And they just kept walking and going through this desert area. And the music accentuates that feeling of like utter like emptiness.
Yeah.
There's just nothing in that
it's
area.
Cool.
And but I really liked it. And then you see like little bits of older things that are even in Planet of the Apes, and Planet of the Apes was 1968.
Right.
And then at one point, you know, they had Taylor being chased by the apes.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, like, this giant claw that's part of the architecture. That's from Forbidden Planet.
Right.
I love that movie.
Yeah, it's cool to know that, you know, like, they, you know, the creators of the first Apes film was like, hey, you know, let's throw in a little, maybe it's a piece that was just laying around and like, hey, we can use that. Or maybe it was throwing tribute to one of the original, you know, sci-fi films.
Yeah. And it's cool to have it in there.
Yeah.
But then when you start tearing it apart, you're like, I wonder why they put it in there.
Yeah.
And so it's just unique. Here it was. It actually was Lake Powell, where the spaceship crashed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was it was on the Colorado River on the Utah-Arizona border. So it makes sense why it was so desolate in that area. What do you like most about Planet of the Apes?
Oh, man. I don't know. Like, I think some really neat things about it is, you know, if you think about, like, what Charlton Heston meant at the time, you know, where, you know, he's Ben-Hur, he's Moses, he's, like, all these big, you know, religious or whatever, like larger than life strong characters. And not that he's not strong in this, but like he's kind of, you know, he's weakened.
Yeah,
you know, he's a guy on his own in a world that is completely unknown, ran by what you would think are, you know, these primitive beings of, like, you know, just like watching his true struggle of like, I'm hopeless. And just when you think like he's gonna be strong, and he finally, like, you know, he gets Dr. Zaius, you know, to basically, you know, hand everything over, and he's like, he's coming out on top.
Yeah.
And then he goes and he sees the Statue of Liberty. And it's, again, it's just like, the hero of the film does not win.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then, again, like, it's a whole movie, you know, based off of, you know, people that can't talk. I don't know. There's a lot of things that interest me about it, but that's one of the main things, you know, is it, you know, you always hear, like, the hero's journey.
Yeah.
And his journey ain't all that great.
No. No, he goes through some really just terrible things. I mean, he gets shot in the neck.
Yeah.
And he can't talk
he
for a portion of the movie.
He loses the only people that he knows.
Yeah.
One
of the guys gets, like,
lobotomized.
Like, he's like, you cut out his brain.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite lines in that movie, because it's just so, it's kind of funny, because it's like, well, they don't know any better.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
But it was really unique, and I just like the fact that, you know, there's so many different, like, fade-ins and dissolves that they use in the film.
Yeah.
And it makes it so, like, such a perfect movie.
Sure, yeah.
For it being a sci-fi, and then they see the crosses, or like
oh,
the
yeah,
X's.
The, you know, they're kind of like scarecrows
yeah,
and whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
It's
yeah.
almost like a border
yeah.
of saying, oh, this is the Forbidden Zone,
yeah.
and you're not
it's
allowed to
imagery.
Go in here. Yeah.
And creepy, and yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah. So, you know, we talked a little bit about it. Marlon Brando was once considered for the title role. I could
okay.
see it,
sure.
but I think Charlton Heston pulled it off better. He had that cynical personality
yeah.
that was just kind
which,
of perfect.
Yeah, I love. Sarcastic. And,
yeah.
And
he was terrible to his other teammates.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he
yeah.
was just awful.
It kind of in a way makes me, and I never put this together, but it kind of makes me think of like Ash from Evil Dead. Like by the time
yeah.
he gets the Army of Darkness, he's just like you know, hell to the king, baby. And I know it's kind of hammed up a little bit more, but there's actually some kind of similar parallels. Like I wonder if, you know, he's like, yeah, Charlton Heston, like he's a man.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And he, you know, I don't know.
It was a really, I mean, I always enjoyed this movie, and like Rod Serling,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he
yeah,
was involved
yep,
and,
yep.
you know, he had areas in the Twilight Zone
mm-hmm.
that reflected some of the things that were happening in Planet of the Apes. A couple of the episodes I could see that there was influences from the Planet of the
For
Apes.
For sure.
And I found it interesting that the film takes place in March 2673 and from November 25th, 3978 to 3979.
Yeah.
So it was like, it was a like an interesting dichotomy of saying, okay, this is super far future.
Yeah.
That, you know, we would never see, or, you know, we'd see, but, you know, it's so out there that it's perfect to make it that way.
Yeah.
And then Roddy McDowall, he had been in the Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm.
People are alike all over. And he actually played an astronaut crashing on a planet
yeah.
taken over by human-like aliens.
Yeah.
And so it was very similar to what what Planet of the Apes was. So.
Right. Yeah, and then, you know, like what Roddy McDowall's meant to the series as a whole.
Yeah.
I mean, he was in one way or another, in every film of the original series. He wasn't in the second one, but he did voiceovers. Then he was in the television series,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a... And, you know, so he played Cornelius for the first three films, and then he played Caesar, you know, afterwards. And then he played, oh crap, what's his name in the TV series? I'm drawing a blank.
I can't remember. I don't
anyway,
think it's in my notes.
But, like, he plays three different characters, and they all have three distinct personalities.
Yeah.
And again, it just shows, you know, the testament to, like, how well he did, you know, going back to those facial tics and expressions and the way he walks and everything. And, yeah.
He made each character his own, to be a different character and still the same voice.
Right.
So I found that really unique. One of the things I still haven't gotten around to actually doing is reading Pierre Boulle's book, the original novel.
I have not either. I'm not a big reader.
Yeah.
I did buy the book because I would really like to see the differences, because I guess there are quite a few.
Yeah,
you know,
I guess there's a twist ending, slightly from the film. The spaceship crew lands on another planet. It's
mm-hmm.
not Earth. The main character, Ulysses, that's ironic, he escapes from the ape authorities with Nova. They return to Earth, only to find that it's undergone the same evolution, which is really interesting. And then the novel adds a further twist that Taylor's story has been told as a flashback after he and Nova fled to Earth.
Hmm.
And I found that really interesting, that the whole idea from the novel is kind of a blending of the original Planet of the Apes and the Tim Burton remake.
Right.
That hadn't come along, because in that movie, Mark Wahlberg goes to return to his quote-unquote universe.
Yeah.
And it's inhabited all by apes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it really shows that maybe they were trying to blend those two together.
Mm-hmm.
And not successfully, but
sure,
they did it. So what we can look at, you know, how did, when you first saw the ending to Planet of the Apes, how did it affect you?
Well, you know, there's certain movies that, like, you know, being younger, not seeing them, and especially for me, not seeing it for many years later, because I didn't honestly give it the chance it deserved.
Yeah.
You end up knowing what the ending is, just because, you know, like, I'm in tune with culture, so mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's still, even knowing, you know, the spoiler, you know, thing, like, oh, he, you know, sees the, you know, cut in half, or, you know, decomposing, or whatever, you know, half-buried Statue of Liberty, and even knowing that that's going to happen, and still just, like, the journey, like, that film takes you on, you still feel like there's no hope. Like, it makes you feel like, man, you know, we do things to each other that, you know, we shouldn't, and you know, like, it's stuff that's really, it's always happened, you know, and not to get into, you know, like, negativity or political stuff,
yeah,
or whatever, but, you know, there's times where we bring each other down and we don't really need to, and I know it's a film, and it you know, brings it up to a you know, bigger thing than maybe it really would be, but, like, you know, it's almost like Civil War.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and it's a film that actually makes you think.
Yeah.
And it's a deep film. It's not a light, you know, airy,
no,
fun 60s film. It's kind of dark.
And yeah.
It has some elements to it that really test your knowledge or your way of looking at life.
Yeah.
And reevaluating it. So, I really found it was super effective, and I had the first time I saw Planet of the Apes, I didn't really have anything going into it.
Sure.
Like, I didn't really know the ending. I didn't know what was going to happen, because I had never seen it.
Sure.
And I had never seen anything revolving around it.
Okay.
So I rented it one day, watched it, and I was like, wow, that's,
yeah,
an
it's
impressive
deep
ending.
Yeah.
And it really showed, whoa, he actually is on the same planet. He's not on an alternate planet.
And that is, yeah, that's the other thing, you know, realizing, you know, at whatever point it is in the film that now you're actually on Earth.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh, and the plot thickens.
Yeah.
And then to see that, oh, we just did it to ourselves.
Yeah. Exactly. So what I'd like to do now is get into kind of the soundtrack portion of the show.
Sure.
One of the things I did when I watched it recently was have the audio commentary with Jerry Goldsmith,
yep,
on it. And it was really interesting because he talked about that he didn't use any electronics for the film. He had it be like a very organic, impressionistic,
right,
yep, score, and it was unique and unorthodox, being able to use instruments like jittery woodwinds and,
sure,
piccolos.
Yep.
And one of the things the director hated about it was that it had piccolos in it.
Okay.
But it made it more effective, so he was like, no, go ahead and keep it. I don't like piccolos, but keep it in the film.
Yeah.
And that was one of the points that he brought out in his commentary, was he was talking about that. And then I like the fact that he talked about the the environment and that there were no special effects, but the cinematography takes you on this journey along with the characters. And then at one point they had the stainless steel mixing bowls and for percussion, and he used sound effects and different things, and it just, it made the movie so much more effective to have that music. And then he also only used a 50-piece orchestra.
Yeah.
And that was even impressive, too, because it's like he was able to get by with instruments and create a feeling rather than use a larger orchestra, you know, like a 100-piece orchestra. Mm-hmm. And so it made it more effective. What do you think of the music itself?
Like I said, I mean, I touched on a little bit of it earlier, you know, being, by the way,
we're live, so there's a video game arcade lounge.
So if you hear arcade music in the background, that's what it's all about. And it's cool, and you know,
you're fine.
It makes it fun.
Yeah,
there's going to be some stuff. So anyway,
and it actually makes it more organic to even hear that there are other sounds going on, and we're talking about unique sounds to the score.
Oh, Comic Con.
Yeah, I've mentioned that. So,
going back to the score, like I said, you know, kind of having that you know, almost Tom and Jerry, or Merry Melodies type, you know, aspect to it of all of their movements are made in the sound, and you know. Especially with the mute humans, or when Charlton Heston is being chased around and is, you know, his partners Landon and I forget the other one's name.
You never remember their names because they
I
die.
Remember Landon. I don't know why I don't remember the other one at the moment, but yeah, like, you know, they're not like running around like yelling at each other or anything, like. They're all just running around, like running for their lives. You know, they're getting captured. They're being chased by apes. And at that point, we don't even know that the apes speak.
Yeah.
So it's there's no dialogue.
Sounds, yeah.
You know, at the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's all played out through the music, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that about
effective storytelling.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, what I'd like to do today, I've got a few cues that I'll play. The first is the main title, The Search and the Hunt. And these cues kind of capture that essence of these three remaining crew and that they seem to be in utter isolation.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we've talked about it before, so what I'm going to do now is just play those cues.
Yep.
So next, I've got a couple cues that take place during the middle of the movie.
Okay.
It's like Revelation and No Escape.
Yep.
Because at one point, Charlton Heston goes to try to escape, and he can't.
Mm-hmm.
And it expresses how he kind of feels, like we mentioned before, that he feels so utterly alone in this environment that's out of his element, and he really feels like he is on another world.
Yeah.
And how desperate the situation is.
Right.
So what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah, I mean, said it just... Sorry, that was a distracting one. No, it just goes to show just, like, how, like you said, you know, how desolate things are, how alone he feels. You know, but then at the same time, like, I can't help but go back and think about, like, and he gets a little, you know, kissy-kiss action with Ozira right in front of Cornelius. So, you know, I guess he's not having too bad of a time.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and he has, you know, that attraction to Nova, and, you know, they, you know, it's almost like he feels like, well, you know, if we need to repopulate, you know, the Earth, like, well, okay, I'm going to have some fun. But yes, aside from, you know, some of those moments, yeah, it's very much like...
He's kind of on his own.
You have nothing.
Yeah.
And you're probably never going to get back to where you came from.
Yeah.
And later we find out that he does this, but...
Yeah. But that's a good way to bring it out. So now I'll play Revelation and No Escape. We'll be right back. So lastly, today is another end to an episode of Soundtrack Alley. It's kind of short, but it's been a really good episode because we've talked a lot about the film music, we've talked about the background. These cues that I'll play here is A Bid for Freedom, The Forbidden Zone, and The Cave. Now what stands out to me is how subtle the cues are.
Yeah.
And Jerry Goldsmith brought this out in his commentary too, that toward the end he wanted it to be a subtle score.
Sure.
And not something bombastic.
I was going to use the exact same word. It's right. Not bombastic, and that's cool. Again, like, these are movies that came out, you know, a few years later, but Star Wars or Superman, and they have some of the hugest, most iconic, you know, scores and themes to them that I like the simplicity of this.
Yeah.
You know,
it's not something you're going to listen to every day.
Sure.
But, like, if you want to go back and revisit this score, it's, like, it's effective.
Yep.
And it makes you appreciate what they had to work
right.
with and how they used the instruments and different tools and things that they used for the score.
Sure. So. Yeah, I own the score on vinyl.
Oh, nice.
Mondo put out a great edition of it, and like, I'm not like a vinyl purist or anything, but there's certain scores or albums or whatever that really helps hearing it in that format, and this is one of them.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really cool. Like, when you open the gatefold, it has the sound effect of the doll going,
"Mama!" Oh, really?
Yeah, so every time you open it, it's got that sound in it.
Wow.
And then listening to, you know, the vinyl and everything, like, it's... Again, it's not, like, super clean sounding, you know, it has some of those scratches and stuff in there, and it kind of takes you back to that almost primitive feeling.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, whoever, you know, if you like that kind of stuff, like, I would check out that vinyl to really, really further put you in the mood of what these songs mean and how they feel.
Yeah, and one of the things that I had researched was the fact that Escape from the Planet of the Apes is actually the most comprehensive score for, like, the 5-movie series.
Yeah, well,
that's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah, absolutely. It feels almost like a 70s sitcom or, you know, soap opera in some senses, especially like during the montages of them getting their modern day human clothes and whatever. So it's nice that they, you know.
All right, so our last bit of music we're gonna play a Bid for Freedom, The Forbidden Zone, and The Cave, and then I'd like to thank you for being on the show.
Of course. It's been
great to be able to be here at O Comic Con and really enjoy the whole podcasting experience, because there's several podcasts around us.
Yeah, no, it's been a great time. You know, I know, you know, we're on the Podcast Arcade Network, but you know, for O Comic Con, it has expanded to including a lot of extra podcasts.
Yeah.
And just the community of it has been a lot of fun. So
yeah.
I'm really happy that, you know, we got to do this show together, and that we've been able to interact with a lot of other great people, and it's been a great time here at O Comic Con.
Yeah, and so I'd also like to thank Jillian Orwell for my intro. Where can people find you, Billy?
If you want to check out the other podcasts that I'm mostly part of, undergroundinc.info or daydreaminstructionmanual.com, all on Facebook, all on Twitter, you can find my shows and Randy's and all of the Podcast Arcade people through thepodcastarcade.com, and... yeah, that's pretty much where you can find the podcasts, or Billy Peck on Facebook or on Twitter at ZombillyHorror.
Okay, and you can find me by emailing me at soundtrackalley@yahoo.com. You can find the show anywhere, really. Yeah. iTunes, Podbean, Google Play. Oh, Google Play is only one word. Like, you have to put it in as only one word, no spaces in it.
Huh.
I learned that. But one last piece of information before we actually... I let the music play its part. Once the music is done for the original Planet of the Apes, I'll be putting in a extra special suite from the new War of the Planet of the Apes. A special preview, as it were, for the release of War of the Planet of the Apes. So,
pretty
exciting. So, enjoy and happy listening.
Thank you.
Hello, my loyal listeners. I just wanted to let you know this is going to be a special suite that I've created from The War of the Planet of the Apes. It goes on for about 20 minutes.
This is the brand new score by Michael Giacchino, and I wanted to make sure to give him credit for the wonderful music that is found in this film.
And it includes Apes Past is Prologue, Apes Together Strong, and end credits of the brand new film for Planet of the Apes. So I hope you enjoy, and happy listening. thank you for listening to Soundtrack Alley, the podcast. I hope you take some time to review my podcast on iTunes and also listen to it on Podbean. And if you leave a review or rating on there, it'll help us get noticed on iTunes. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to Soundtrack Alley Spotlight. If you are on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. Also, if you want to leave a comment, question, or concern, please email me at soundtrackalley@gmail.com and enjoy looking at my blog at soundtrackalley.com.